You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush. I'm your host, and my blog can be found at andrewbush.com. Now, in this segment, we discuss death taxes with former Utah Senator Bob Bennett. Now, the senator served Utah from 1992 to 2011. He was a counsel to the Republican leader Mitch McConnell on legislative strategy and policy priorities. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator, welcome to Engage.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, I want to cover many topics with such a smart and well-connected guy like you, but the one I want to get to first is the proposal that you have on simplifying the estate tax. Now, simplifying the U.S. tax code has been gaining a lot of momentum, obviously. So tell me about your proposal and how does it work?
The proposal recognizes that the estate tax is not an efficient tax. That is, does not bring in very much money to the federal government. That might surprise a lot of people because they look at all of the wealthy folks that die and say, oh, we're going to get all that money. No, they go to great lengths to avoid the estate tax with a variety of tax avoidance activities, all of which are legal. And so working with others, and particularly some of the auto dealers that have been involved in this because they're very much exposed to this.
Oh, sure.
I've said, okay, let's start with a few fundamentals here. Number one, if the tax isn't producing much tax revenue, it doesn't need defending in its present state. And number two, perhaps most important from a principle, death is not an economic event. Let me emphasize that again. Death is not an economic event. If you own a business or a farm or an auto dealership or what have you, and you are looking to sell it at the very best time for you and your heirs in order to achieve the highest possible return, you pick the economic circumstance that makes it right to sell rather than the death of somebody that can come along at just exactly the wrong time as far as the survival of the business is concerned.
Certainly.
So here's the way the thing would work. It's completely optional. It is not mandated at all. It's entirely up to the taxpayer as to whether or not he or she wants to implement it. But let's say she does. Okay, you have an estate. You have evaluated it. You've looked at what you want to have happen with it. And you want it to be preserved to your heirs to be sold by them at the best economic moment rather than at the time of your death. So you say, all right, I will opt into this program, which will require me to prepay, if you will, some of the tax revenue to the federal government. I will pay 1% of my adjusted gross income every year between the date I decide to opt in and the time I die. As a result of having prepaid that amount of money, the federal government then agrees that there will be no tax on the elements of my estate until those elements are sold. So let's say it's an auto dealership, and I look at my auto dealership and it's going very well, and I'm going to say, okay, the estate tax bite is going to be huge on this if it continues to grow this way, unless I take this option. So if I take the option, I do not have to go out and spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, in tax avoidance schemes.
Right.
And when my heirs say, okay, the time has come for us to get out of the automobile business, someone's come along and just made us a great offer, and the booming moment when the thing is worth the highest amount, that's the point at which we sell, and that's the point at which the federal government says, okay, because you have not paid anything up until now except for the prepayments that the previous owner made prior to her death, you now pay the standard capital gains tax, as if you had bought it, held it through your lifetime, made the decision at the right economic moment. You're willing to pay the capital gains tax, but not the death tax. And the studies that have been done say this is probably revenue neutral. That is, you take the money paid up front, and then the increased value of the asset when it gets sold, that is the value greater than if it had been sold at death,
right,
and apply the capital gains tax to that, and you put it all together, the federal government is going to get as much money as it's getting now, maybe in some circumstances even a little more, but the taxpayer is not going to have to go to the great expense of tax avoidance schemes in order to keep the amount that the federal government gets down at the levels where it now is. That's
right.
The explanation of how it works.
Right. So the benefit is, for the business owner, clearly, is to allow them the opportunity to sell the business at the highest possible point of value, while also providing to the federal government revenues that would come in and would allow the individual to not engage in all these bad activities of running around. Well, they're not bad; they're legal, but
they're just more efficient.
They're
bad in the sense that they don't add any economic value to it.
Right, they're inefficient. So, would you agree with that? It sounds really interesting. I mean, what's great about it too, I will say, is that the proposal already has been written into legislative language to make it ready to go if you can get it through committee. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was introduced in the lame duck of the last Congress, recognizing that it wasn't going to pass, but just as a laying down a marker that this is what we're interested in. Well, as a result of that, that means that you can now get a score. You can now go to the Joint Tax Committee and say, we believe, based on the studies we've done, which we'll share with you, that this will be revenue neutral. But now let's get a formal score of what the impact would be out of the Joint Tax Committee. If the score comes in where we expect it to be, then we've got a great talking point when we go before the tax writing committees. We say, here's something that helps the economy, it helps the government, and it's revenue neutral. You don't have to worry about arguing about who's getting this benefit or who's getting that benefit in terms of the tax impact. The federal government gets the same as getting now.
Well, I think what's great about that is that that's under static scoring. I think under dynamic scoring, you'd do even better because you're talking about making it more efficient. You're talking about getting the greatest economic value, and I think that lends itself to a higher dynamic score, which somewhat brings up the whole question of static versus dynamic scoring, and I'm sure you'll get it scored either way. Obviously, the House has made an effort to move towards dynamic scoring.
Yes, and there's a piece in the Wall Street Journal that goes through the economic metrics of dynamic scoring and makes it very, very clear that dynamic scoring is far more accurate than the static scoring that we've been living with all these years.
Yeah, it's astounding to me that we haven't moved towards it already, some people say, because of the difficulty of it. But I would say, you know, for instance, under immigration, right, the president proposed to change the immigration rules using dynamic scoring because of all those people coming in paying taxes, you know, economic growth and so on.
Yeah.
So that's to me that's kind of interesting. You know, taking a step back, and let me just shift gears a little bit. The president talked about middle-class economics and proposing changes to the tax code to fund his programs, but the changes appear really geared towards making the tax code, much more complicated, not less, and yours is striving towards a more simplified estate tax.
Exactly. And one of the other things about it is that it's a fix in the tax code which, once it's put in place, won't have to be tinkered with. One of the things that drives people absolutely crazy is the fact that Congress, on the average, for the last, 20, 30 years, pick a number, has changed the tax code every 18 months in one way or another.
Unbelievable.
So you're trying to make long-range plans, and you put in place your strategic decisions. And having been the CEO of a company that started out in a basement with four full-time employees and then went to the New York Stock Exchange with a market cap of $300 million some 6 years later, I can tell you tax codes matter in
right.
the strategic decisions you make. We were fortunate enough to have built that company in what the New York Times calls the decade of greed. That is the Reagan years when the top tax rate was 28%.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran it as an S corporation, so the 28% came through our individual returns. We only had to pay taxes once. And people say, well, you know, that's terrible that you got by with that. And I say, no. If we had had to pay today's tax rates, which if you add the top rate, which is 39.5%, then or 39.6, and then you add Medicare on top of that, because this was going through our individual returns now.
Right.
And then you add state taxes. You know, the taxes would take 50 cents out of every dollar we earned.
It's unbelievable. Well, hey,
let me go back to the decade of greed, just
right.
quickly. At 28%, that meant we got to keep 72 cents of every dollar we earned, which is what made it possible for us to grow the business and create the jobs.
And I think so many people miss that point. The very last thing you said was, and grow the jobs. You know, everybody thinks that you can just raise taxes, get the money you want, and nobody gets hurt except for the fat cats or banks or whatever you call it. But you get less of what you tax. I think that's, you just got to keep that in mind. So let me ask you this, just in the minute we got left. Overall, what do you think are the chances for a Paul Ryan, Orrin Hatch-led tax reform this year?
If it were left entirely up to the Congress, I think the chances are pretty good. Orrin Hatch's opposite number on the Finance Committee is Ron Wyden,
right,
who has made common cause with Paul Ryan in trying to reform the tax code.
Mm-hmm.
The question comes down to how badly will the president want reform, and how willing will he be to embrace the kind of reform we're talking about, that which will cause economic growth, as opposed to that which makes good campaign speeches for Elizabeth Warren.
I think that is about as succinctly as I've ever heard it. All right, former Senator Bob Bennett, thank you for coming on the show today. It's been really a treat.
My pleasure.
All right, let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll continue our conversation on taxes. You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Where is the best place to put your money? Rick Saylor with co-host Eric Hamburg will take the mystery out of investing in order to keep your hard-earned wealth performing and protecting to its maximum potential. Listen for Straight Talk, Clear Decisions, live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Rick Saylor, smooth financial sailing for the best part of your life.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.